Hello, friends. Welcome to our 62nd program dealing with the Rays and Initiations Part 2. An amazing section of the book. Well, so was Part 1. Anyway, perhaps we have read less Part 2 than we have Part 1, and it's certainly the case with me. I've gone over and over Part 1, and now to give that kind of attention to Part 2. Yes, I've read it, but reading is never enough. What's causing this creative crisis in humanity? We have learned the conclusion of a 25,000-year cycle of movement around what is called the lesser zodiac being our 12 signs or 12 constellations, so connoting a major experience in our planetary logos. The end of the Piscean Age, and I would add not only the smaller Piscean Age of, well, it depends on how you look at it, either 2,000 years, 2,160 years, or perhaps 2,500 years, depending on what kind of overlaps we use. But not only the end of that, but the impending end of the 25,000-year cycle, the great Platonic year ruled by Pisces. And then, one more thing, the increasing lead dominant activity of the seventh ray of order or ceremonial magic, says the Tibetan, as it is somewhat erroneously called. Well, that's the name we have been given, and we don't really have perhaps a better name yet, but it is the ray that brings heaven to earth, and it's the ray of the embodiment of the archetype, the objectification of the archetype in the world of purpose, found on the monadic plane and also even more coherently or essentially on the logoic plane. Well, these are causing the stir within the human family, and many other things are going on as well. The reappearance of the Christ, representing the emergence of the soul of the planetary logos in a stronger way, and the movement of humanity a certain proportion off from out the fourth kingdom of nature into the fifth kingdom of souls, and thus the initiation of humanity. This is the era that hierarchy has anticipated for so many years. It's been out of the range of understanding of humanity, but now some of us are fortunate enough to have come in contact with the Tibetan's books and his thought, and we are led into an understanding of the amazing time through which we are passing. Okay. So there are other factors present, he says, but these are the ones which will, he qualifies it, in a vague sense, mean something to you as you think and seek to understand. Excuse me. So we're beginning number 62, and he says, the great cosmic initiation through which our planetary logos is passing, and forget not my words, initiatory process, produces an entire reorganization of all the energies of which his body of manifestation is composed. So, you know, the seventh ray being a ray of organization and reorganization, its presence either in the short term or perhaps in the 25,000-year long term, there's nothing to prove that except perhaps an analogy with the shorter processional cycle. Perhaps that presence facilitates. But if it's a cosmic initiation, it is still somewhere in the distance, I believe. Somewhere in the distance. Okay. Yeah, I wonder if I can do that or if I'm going to run into. No, that's good. So, somewhere. It's always easier to type two letters than it is to type seven or eight. So, somewhere in the distance, because we can say because the planetary locus is passing through a kind of fourth initiation pertaining to the to its fourth chain, which is our chain. So we are involved in some major transformations. So the great cosmic initiation. Now, it's a process. So what will it be? It will probably PRB. Oh, probable PRL, BBL, presumably. Oh, goodness. Anyway, it will probably be the second cosmic initiation, whereas the solar logos may be in a different scheme of initiations altogether, is working on a third cosmic initiation. Just because you use the word cosmic doesn't mean it's the same series of initiation. The human being will have to pass through a kind of first cosmic initiation in relation to its introduction to the entered apprentice phase of the Sirian scheme of initiation. But the planetary logos was a master many Mahakalpas ago, and no matter how you count Mahakalpas, whether you count them as a complete solar system with the duration of trillions of years, or some lesser cycle, is still a long time. So the human being is simply a cell within the planetary logos and cannot be compared. The scope of its initiations cannot be superimposed upon each other, because even though the term cosmic is used, there's such a huge distance or in magnitude between the kinds of initiations each would be taking. So it heightens the quality or vibration of certain ray energies and lessens the potency of others. Okay, well, which they are, we don't know. We only know the seventh ray is increasing in potency. Maybe, certainly for about 2,500 years, and maybe for 25,000 years. Those are just rounded off figures. The masters don't seem to want to give us the real figures just yet. It might be possible to compute too much and unwittingly interfere with the divine plan as it works itself out in this planetary scheme. The Black Lodge is certainly seeking, we're told, to acquire knowledge of that plan in detail so it can disrupt it, and we unwittingly might do so, not that we would have the purpose of doing so. Direction also enters in, and thus the will. Certain planetary centers become the recipients in a new and vital manner of the redirected ray potencies. So this is all about chakric stimulation and passage, a directed passage from one chakra to another, directed passage of energy, of energy from one chakra to the other. Among these, at this time, the human family, or the third vital center, which we recall and realize, the throat center, even though elsewhere, Ajna center is suggested, becomes the prime objective. I guess it depends on what bracket of humanity the Tibetan is considering. And I'm going to make that ELW, and that's going to help me with elsewhere. Okay. Hopefully, this computer will last for a long time, and I'll be able over the years to take advantage of this particular collection of abbreviations, which in the long run facilitates the discussion of the Tibetan's material. The three major centers in the body of the planetary logos. Now, what do we mean by body? You know, do we mean the three lower planes, worlds, three lower worlds, or three lower planes? And I'm going to do that one too. Three lower planes. Do we mean that? Or do we mean the entire expression of the planetary scheme involving the cosmic physical plane as an entirety? And sometimes the word personality is referred to as body. Now, although Shambhala is said to take place on our particular globe, and hierarchy too, and humanity too, it's very possible that we have to consider the range of Shambhala hierarchy and humanity as pervasive throughout the scheme. So shall we consider the range of Shambhala hierarchy and humanity as pervasive throughout the scheme, the PLSC, the planetary scheme. That's a bit of a problematic question. It's a bit like the whether to consider the Buddhas of activity as relating only to our particular globe and three higher existences relating to the chain level and still higher existences that are prototypes of the two lesser as relating to the scheme. Is Shambhala a globe phenomenon? Is it a chain phenomenon? Is it in the eyes of the planetary logos a scheme phenomenon? This has to be discussed and understood. It's hard to think of it as limited to our globe. But sometimes he speaks as if that is its esoteric location. The impact of the new incoming energies upon humanity will result from a planned redirection. Now, you know, this has to mean that the planetary logos is planning and redirecting. And maybe the solar logos gets in on the act. But that's probably pretty remote and probably would involve not so much humanity as hierarchy and Shambhala itself. This will bring in an era of greatly enhanced creative activity. Well, you know, Aquarius... Whoop. That's what happens when you press the wrong buttons. Aquarius is related to the third ray of creative intelligence. So I think it has other ray relations, fifth, and maybe in some deeper sense, the first ray. And within it, of course, all the rays have to be influenced, just as on any planet, even our own little minor sacred planet, all the rays are in some way emphasized. But the creative activity of Aquarius is well known, and that is impending. It will be such an activity, it will be an activity such as has never been seen before, which will express itself in every department of human living. So in this respect, all the ashrams will be creative in a new way. And DK tells us about the impending new renaissance. rebirth renaissance. I guess, if he tells us that it's going to make the great cathedrals look like the building blocks of a child, we can only imagine what is coming and how liberating and joyful it will be, and why the lords of form and in some ways the lords of slavery want to hold humanity back from that kind of expression. But we can't let that happen, obviously. And we're on the job trying to make sure that it does not happen, and sacrifices will be required. So let's see, if I say, in this respect, ITR, in this respect. There are these qualifying phrases which have a few words in them and which are happily abbreviated. In this connection, I would remind you of the relation existing between the sacral center, the physical creative center, and the throat center, and of the teaching anent the raising of the energies from the lower center to the throat center. And this occurs particularly, but continually, but ongoingly, at the time of the first initiation, which humanity is now preparing to take. And we might say, thus, the impending creativity, but for many other reasons as well. It's the throat center that is going to be stimulated in a new way, and it's going to relate to higher aspects of the man's energy centers, where the divine ideas can make an impact and descend and stimulate creative work. This can be seen happening in the human being as he progresses along the path of evolution, okay, entering the creative period in which, so many are even now, and is equally present in the life and experience of the planetary logos. Let's just say that in this case, analogies do hold. We have to work with the law of analogy and the somewhat more exacting law of correspondences. And we have to be judicious regarding the degree of detail into which we enter when we work with those laws. A similarity of form may be suggested a similarity of process, but not exactitude. And if we take the analogy too far, then by forcing the appearance of exactitude, we distort our understanding of the true relationship. This progressive creative raising necessarily produces a cycle of tremendous difficulty in the life of the aspirant to initiation, for the microcosm undergoes in his minute living process what the planetary logos undergoes in a cosmic process. Maybe any initiation that a planetary logos takes can, from one perspective, be considered cosmic. Maybe any initiation taken by a planetary logos can be considered cosmic, but I am reserving the term cosmic mostly for a higher type of initiation than one which is a chain initiation. And there's another one of those nice repeated words, and I would just say cosmic. Okay. When, as is the case today, let's see if there's more to be said. Yes, this you can see this happening out in the question of sexuality at the present time. Libra governs the sexuality, sexuality of the human kingdom, and is a third ray sign or constellation. Is strong, is becoming stronger and stronger in the planetary horoscope, DK tells us. So, this effect will work out within the third center, humanity, and produce much uncertainty and rebalancing of the energies within the etheric body. Uncertainty. Okay. Well, we see this, you know, there's so many questions about right sexuality, whether it conforms to the divine law or whether it's in the hands of humanity, and the whole issue of the lawfulness or otherwise of homosexuality. These are things which are all being worked out by humanity at this present time, at the same time that the disciples of the world are supposed to be working in Scorpio about a higher form of union with the soul. So there's this kind of like horizontal union being worked out in Libra, in humanity, and under the third ray. And for the new group of world servers and those who are members of the periphery of the hierarchy, higher transsexual issues are being worked out on a vertical plane. When is in the, as is the case today, humanity itself is in process of becoming creative in the higher sense. You know, I mean, you know, can we move this sacral energy into the higher and creative, not procreative, throat center? This is the question, and what will occur in the process of doing so, either unconsciously or consciously. So, CNSL unconsciously, yes, UNCNSL, CNSL, or, well, I already have it, unconsciously. Because when we are operating unconsciously, obviously, there are many more problems that arise because we don't really know what we're doing, and yet we somehow are being forced through the process because, you know, Libra rules the sacral center in many respects. As we learn, you know, in the early days, it is associated with unbalanced, fiery passion. Later, it's associated with Uranus. Uranus is about freedom. The question of freedom and law is always going to come up in relation to sexuality. So it's a Saturn-Uranus issue that is operative at the moment, and humanity is trying to decide which way to go on this, either in some old repressive mode of action or with somehow with greater understanding. So when, as is the case today, humanity itself is in the process of becoming creative in the higher sense, and when this synchronizes with a major creative planetary activity, let's just say Libra growing stronger in the planetary horoscope, and Aquarius, a creative sign coming in force, then a cycle of very great disturbance eventuates, which necessarily affects every individual within the race of men. So, you know, we look for answers from the subtle worlds and from the parts of the planet which very few have any notion really exist, and from the planets and the stars and so forth. It's a long-range view of causation. And I think we have to try to make this reasonable to people whose scope of understanding with regard to causation is much more limited. So, going on then, hence the sexual disturbance to be seen everywhere. Now, this was, you know, written back in the 40s, and it's only increased with the so-called sexual revolution and the sanctioning of what were previously called perversions and are written against in a number of the scriptures. So hence the sexual disturbance to be seen everywhere, with the license present in every country and the apparent breakdown of the marriage relation. Well, take a look at that, you know. Let's just say that Saturn, the planet of law, is the highest and exalted ruler of Libra, the sign of marriage. And Uranus is there too, insisting on individual freedom, regardless, and people become a law unto themselves. So a kind of humanism enters, and man becomes the measure of all things. I remember back in college, I had a very fine English scholar as a teacher of English literature and Shakespeare and so forth. And, well, you know, he was very old then, so he can't be alive now. That was more than 50 years ago. And he had lost two sons in the Second World War, you know, as a British citizen. And he reverted to a very conservative religion after that happened. And even though his mind was vast in certain respects, he held tightly to these original laws, and he considered the Renaissance to be decadent and the medieval outlook upon life to be correct. And I always wondered, you know, how he could do that, but life presents one with many challenges, and how we respond to those can be either with greater and wider understanding or with the reflexive falling back into apparently safer and more restricted points of view. So anyway, you know, Uranus says, I'll do what I want, and Saturn says, this is the law. So all of this is being worked out, and only the divine plan or some understanding of it can reveal which is the correct way to go. Okay, so license is everywhere. The willingness or tendency to assert one's own will against what is usually considered to be the law. This indicates the emergence eventually of a creativity of such wondrous dimensions that the world will stand amazed. Well, the fourth ray is coming in. Master Serapis, we are told, is working with the Deva Kingdom, Master Serapis on the fourth ray, a fourth ray. Chauhan is working with the Deva Kingdom, and this is that's one of those words we always want, DVK. If I say DK, it'll be DK, but no, Deva Kingdom, to prepare for this new renaissance. And nothing like it will have been seen before. It will be so tremendously uplifting, and will, you know, confirm what Master Moria always seems to be saying, that with beauty thou hast the light. So, you know, this sense of freedom, we need the freedom to create. The freedom can be used rightly, can be used wrongly. But at least we emerge from the ancient strictures, which just hold our mind in containment and do not let us experiment. So many experiments are going on now, and we will see where they lead. Many problems are more complex and have a more ancient history than we can imagine, so it's hard to make judgment about them. Let's just say that education and the preservation of human liberty and freedom are a combination which really, I think, works in the long run. People have to try things, and people have to look at the larger picture at the same time and see how their experiments fit within a larger context. So the emergence of this disturbance, so basically what he's saying that that which causes the disturbance is not necessarily a bad thing, because other and far better outcomes can be expected than the initial disturbance due to ignorance or ignorant handling of newly available energies. A creative planning for human well-being and a political expression implementing this planning will demonstrate in every country. And, you know, we often call this welfare or social, sometimes socialism, and but it is a way of looking out for everybody in particular groups, rather than the welfare of just a few who work greedily. So this, you know, and it has been working out. Some would like to curtail this planning for human well-being. Certainly, the United Nations has shown an extraordinary planning for human well-being, and almost every fairly advanced country seeks to look out for the less fortunate among its citizens. A creative thinking will be apparent, which will express itself in writing and poetry. Wow, that's sort of sends a light bulb off in my mind. He says, actually, the creative approach to the word and to literature will be first to manifest. There will be that in art and in music and so forth. But he told us that that which deals with the word will come first. That's the third aspect first, let us say, and oftentimes it does manifest that way. Creative thinking will be apparent, which will express itself in writing and in poetry. Creative imagining will produce the new art, the new colors, which maybe are more sensitive bodies conditioned by the constant impact of the seventh ray will register. The new architecture, you know, city planning and all that's coming in with the fourth ray. He tells us that in the higher methods of teaching the truth. So city planning, architecture, all that's connected with the impending fourth ray. And the new culture, the cult of Ur, the cult of light, as Master Moria calls it. A creative responsiveness to the music of the spheres will bring forth the new music. It's so beautiful to anticipate, but obviously we have to get through a period in which a great battle is occurring between those who have a vision and positive expectation of what can come and those who want to enforce the bad old ways of limitation and ultimately slavery. All this will be in response to the creative reorganization and the newly directed energies which are engaging the attention of the planetary logos at this time. So all these wonders of the new new age are the result of initiatory changes within the processes of our planetary logos. And of course, you can never stop there. It goes beyond, because the solar logos, I mean, all the great beings are in the process of taking one initiation or another. Solar logos is engaged too, and on and on. And it all has an effect on our planetary logos, which has an effect on the higher hierarchies within our planet, which has an effect upon the fourth creative hierarchy of human beings, and on until, you know, the lesser hierarchies are also affected. It's all an interlocking chain of a cause and effect. It's a downflow and yet an upflow at the same time. All this reorganization and redirection of energies is carried forward in the realm of the divine third aspect, that of divine intelligence. So we expect the abstract mind to be involved, and also the spiritual will of Atma, which is found on the third degree TRD plane. So I just want to get, you know, you have to have those cardinals in there. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Wait a second. Let's get out of there. Okay. TRD, third. Okay. Third. All right. Third plane. So Atma, the spiritual will, is trying to implement these things, and the soul body in many ways represents a kind of third aspect which leads to increasing manifestation. So it's all done in the realm of the divine third aspect, that of the divine active intelligence. And let's just say, this is the realm, you know, speaking in Hindu mythology, this is the realm of Brahma. We can't leave Vishnu and Shiva out of it, but the creative intelligence aspect is the realm of Brahma, involves the five lower subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, the worlds of normal evolution from the human perspective, and the worlds of supernormal evolution, as we human beings look at the possibilities on the planes of the spiritual triad. Therefore, the human center, that's us, humanity, registers this major aspect, third aspect, and becomes intensely invocative. Okay, this, let's call it TRD. Let's see, did I do this? Third aspect of divinity, and becomes intensely invocative, maybe of the higher third ray. This invocative appeal being unitedly directed towards the second major center. Okay, I stand corrected there, at least in part. The hierarchy inevitably evokes a response. So we human beings who represent the third divine aspect, third aspect of divinity, invoke hierarchy, which represents the second aspect of divinity. Invocation accompanied by the creative imagination will produce the new creative activity which will bring the new heavens and the new earth into being. Now, isn't he? Now, what do you recognize here? Is he not speaking in microcosmic terms of the building of the Antikorana? Because, you know, the new heavens are already exist in a way, but they will descend via the seventh ray and create a new earth. And when you think about the Antikoranic process, it really is a question of invocation from a sufficient point of tension on the mental plane, and the use of the creative imagination, which conditions, that point of tension, those two things have to be in place in the first two stages of building the Antikorana. So tension and the invocation which it can bring, accompanied by the imagination, and of course projection, the third phase, is part of the invocation as well. And it goes all the way to the fourth phase, where the first half of invocation and evocation registers invocation. That's what is in our hands as a soul infused personality who is doing the invoking. I think when we do the Antikorana work, we have to remember always that we are the soul infused personality, and we are imbued by the presence of our soul energy and soul ray, and we can't really project into the higher worlds via the imagined bridge which we have created unless we have a requisite degree of soul infusion. Three points I would like to make here. They have a definite bearing upon our subject. So we're talking about an intense activity within the human kingdom and the response of human beings intensely to those directed energies from the planetary logos. The intense activity, creative activity, sounds promising, doesn't it? I guess every artist knows what this is all about, and we all have to become artists of our lives. TK tells us we're moving into a phase where we're not so much going to be the artists as we are going to master the art of living. So this is a different thing, but of course, the conventional artist, or maybe now the non-conventional artist, will be with us as well. An artist is great when that artist can give form to an abstractly sensed archetype, which is built upon the plane of purpose, built and held by the thought and imaginative power of the planetary logos. So anyway, here comes this intense creative activity, and what happens? A destructive cycle wherein the old order passes away, and that which has been created, human civilization with its accompanying institutions, is destroyed. Well, goodness, you know, here we are with Neptune in Pisces, and the reappearance of the Christ is being prepared, and with this preparation come two planets which are often difficult to know. DFLT, DFT, different. DFC, DFC, and I want to get that. Sorry to stop the flow when I do that, but it is what it is for the moment. Often difficult to deal with. And what are those two planets? You know them. And this is Vulcan and Pluto. And Pluto almost comes first here, although Vulcan is involved. So in preparation for the reappearance, difficult planets of destruction. We can call it this way, first ray planets of destruction, Vulcan the hammer, and Pluto, something like this, upward pointing arrow of death. Sounds agreeable, doesn't it? So anyway, much of what we've been living through and much of what has structured our world is being destroyed right before our eyes. And of course, the reactionary response is hold on to that, hold on to the good old bad things, or and try to preserve them. DK talks about a movement following the Second World War for all of the old churches and ancient buildings to be rebuilt as they were. That would have been retrogression, wouldn't it? So he encourages us away from such a reactionary response. Reactionary responses are based on fear and lack of imagination. You know, you fear to lose what you know, and you can't imagine anything better. So, you know, we have to help school human beings away from that kind of response. With this destructive action, humanity is today occupying itself, so that's the Second World War, mostly unconsciously. So this is the Second World War. So the major, and unconsciously, see, our job is to help make humanity on large more aware, more aware of what is necessarily happening to them due to larger causes. And I think many people will welcome this, though some will be rigid and will be fearful of the new exposition. You know, you kind of have to pay heavily when you want to bring in the new exposition. I'm reminded of Giordano Bruno. I think he was burned to death by the church and the Inquisition in the year 1600, and he had presented this vast astronomical view of the cosmos, which was a big move at decentralization. It even decentralized our sun and its solar system, and people just can't bear the loss of their self-importance or the importance of that to which they adhere. It's a very frightening thing, and he paid the price on that. The major creative agents are the intelligentsia of the race. So, you know, and they are they are affected by Mercury with its third, fourth, and fifth rays at different positions in the energy system. So this is intense creative activity, and we're talking mainly at first, humanity is experiencing this now. It's a destructive cycle. It really hasn't ended yet, has it? So much is being dissolved and washed away, even the rising of the oceans and the threatening of certain cities and islands and all of that. You know, we're being engulfed in the waters of dissolution with Neptune in Pisces before the very promising Neptune entry into Aries, which is really all about the reappearance of the Christ. At least not, doesn't have to be immediate, but it has to really be envisioned in a practical way, and that's what TK tells us begins to happen after 2025. What's the next thing? A cycle of restoration will come, with many accompanying difficulties in which the mass of men take part. So, you know, really, what shall we human beings rebuild? That's the question. And there will be differences, differences of opinion. Under the influence and inspiration of a regenerated intelligentsia, one which is not so subject to ordinary animal desire, but to the sweep of the energies of the soul. So the regeneration of the intelligentsia, this is something that we disciples also have some obligation with regard to which we have some obligation because we can bridge there. You know, it's very easy to be smart and then to be trapped in the concrete mind. So that is the smartness of knowledge, but it's not wisdom. And we can bridge from the wisdom which we have accumulated through our efforts to the extensive knowledge of the intelligentsia and thus help to regenerate the mind of the intelligentsia. Of course, at first we'll be rejected, but after a while it'll all begin to make sense to them, just as it began to make sense to us when we came under the influence of the great masters and their teaching. So this is intense creative activity. It falls into a destructive cycle This is the building of the new heaven and the new earth. It falls into a destructive cycle and a reconstructive or restorative cycle. And here's another succeeding. This process received its initial impulse as a result of a group decision made within hierarchy itself. Initial impulse. So this is a strongly stimulative process. And why did it occur? DK is giving us a reason here. Certain masters who were facing the sixth initiation of decision at the time. So that had to be maybe 1903, you know, or 1854. A relatively small but powerful group decided to tread the path of Earth's service, technically understood the very first path, in order to bring about the changes which they sensed as desirable and already existing within the consciousness of the one initiator. Elsewhere, we are told that Sanat Kumara retained these initiates of the sixth degree on the planet. These initiates registered their decision for later destinations and then worked in the field of Earth, Earth service. Okay, so they sensed what was in the mind of Sanat Kumara, what was in the plans of Sanat Kumara, and they stayed back. They sacrificed, you know, because sacrifice can be considered in one respect, standing at your post, doing what needs to be done, even past the time that you would be free to leave that post, and foregoing temporarily in time, Saturn, that which you could be experiencing now, but choose to experience later for the sake of those who need your attention now. So in order to bring about the changes which they sense as desirable and as already existing within the consciousness of the one initiator, the planetary logos. Interesting here, note this. The planetary logos is here called the one initiator, and Sanat Kumara is often called the one initiator. And remember that Sanat Kumara is an extension of the planetary logos. Now, they're really the same being in a way, but, you know, an emanation is the same of the same essence as the source from which it emanates, but it doesn't have the same scope of power nor necessarily all of the qualities. So it was their decision taken early in this century, 1903, I guess, because 1952 and 2001 and the next one's 2050, which precipitated in the center, which we call the race of men, those potencies and stimulating energies, which produced that major destructive energy, the world war. So, you know, many are the causes of World War One and World War Two. But the deciding initiates of the sixth degree were one of the principal higher causes. The eruption of evil, you know, was perhaps in response to their decision to throw so much goodness into the stimulating process. So, so that's shortly after their decision, the revolution in science occurred with Einstein's a definition of light, of matter as energy. Well, I mean, there's so much to it, you know, but that whole fifth ray group there. Okay. I want to get this correct definition. So, as these occult energies occultly fell into the center, the effect produced was both good and bad, you know, how to handle. How to handle, always a risk. Such great energies, always a risk. We don't know what humanity will do. Even the hierarchy does not know what humanity will do. It maybe assesses the probabilities. Human unity and unanimity, human planning for group welfare, and human creativity expressed primarily at this time through science, interesting, see, received a tremendous stimulation. So our lives on the physical plane became facilitated. If you even look back to what we had from the technological point of view back in the early parts of the 20th century with what exists now, we see what a tremendous change there has been. Simultaneously, the entering potencies released by the decision produced an upsurging of evil, reactionary force, in the hearts of men so inclined, and DK talks about the group around Hitler as selfish from life to life, the selfish human beings, leading to an analogous or paralleling activity, paralleling unity, unanimity, and creative activity of separative and hateful evil. Separative and hateful evil started, it seems, before the decision by Bismarck. Nurtured along in those two countries, particularly Germany and Austria, during the intervening years, and then capitalized upon by Hitler and his evil group. This, in its turn, opened the door where evil dwelt and let loose on earth the full fury of the Black Lodge. What a sentence that is, huh? The full fury of the Black Lodge. So there had been, let's just look at it this way. No, that's not what I want. There had always been planetary evil, right? And even, I'll put it this, there had always been planetary evil, and from time to time in Rome, France, those places, maybe more, an expression of cosmic evil, but never the full fury of the Black Lodge. So it was a kind of an Armageddon battle of a tremendous scope. Well, we'll get into that. I think we're at the point where I have to say that this is the end of Raise That Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 62. It's taking place on the 9th of February. Maybe it's not even necessary to give the date. And we're doing the pages, I always go hunting here, and I should know better. Yeah, 551 to 554. I believe that's it. And if I do it wrong, it won't be too bad. 551 to 554. And our next work will be beginning of Raise and Initiation Webinar Commentary. Excuse me for slurring my words. Number 63. And when it will take place, I don't know, but it'll begin with page 554. Okay, well, you know, some amazing historical ideas here. And somehow I'm so grateful for the opportunity to slowly think about these things that DK has written for as part of the last book he presented to humanity in the second series. One can only imagine, I just get that feeling of what it'll be like to have the presentation of his mind for the third installment. We want to be ready for that. Our readiness has to do with assimilation and application of what has been given, so we all have a big responsibility in that regard. Okay, friends, thank you for being in attendance, no matter what year you may be working in. And we'll go on and do a little bit more when the next occasion opens up for me. I'd like to be doing this all day, but there are so many mundane and practical things having to do with the distribution of the teaching and, you know, doing the things that just have to be done at this time, in this place, you know, hopefully more time will open up for this speculative work on the more advanced teaching that Master DK has given. So thank you, and we'll be talking to you soon. Bye-bye.